Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's Friday, and you know how we do every Friday. It's the Duff McKagan Joke of the Week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. I just traveled back from Johannesburg, Africa, South Africa, to Los Angeles. I had to stop for, it was a long trip, let me tell you that. I stopped in the Canary Islands, and guess what? There's no canaries. So then I went to the Virgin Islands, and guess what? There's no canary. Thank you very much.
All right. That was pretty funny. That's pretty funny. I didn't get last week's joke, but actually I had to call Duff and ask him to decipher it because sometimes it's hard to understand what he's saying if you don't get the punchline. Last week he said, I came back to the hotel. I took the elevator up to the room. Other people took the stairs up to the room. Ultimately, we're all just raised differently. Duff McKagan calling from all over the world to deliver the joke of the week. He's been doing it for about 15 months now, and we appreciate it. Not a lot of other Rock and Roll Hall of Famers are calling in weekly dad jokes, as they say, every week. Duff just got back from South Africa after doing sold-out stadium shows with Guns N' Roses. Duff has a solo record coming out later this year based lyrically on all of the experiences he's had since the Guns N' Roses reunion. Very, very cool. He's back home. I'm back home as well. Fozzy wrapped up the worldwide Judas Rising tour with a final show in Calgary on Tuesday night. Thanks to everybody who came out to see us the last couple of years, over 22 countries and over 160 gigs. How do you think about that? And we've got one more show booked so far. It's a big one. Opening for a little band called Iron Maiden in Los Angeles next September. Can't wait. You know what else I can't wait to do? See the new Troma movie, Return to Nukem High. Finally being released for rental and purchase on Christmas Eve on Troma Now. Troma Now is Troma Film's streaming and download site. The whole Troma catalog is there, and they release new content every week. Lots of movies and documentary extras. Very, very awesome stuff. Check it out. It's called Troma Now. You can find it at watch.troma.com. And to celebrate the release of Return to Nukem High, Troma founder and filmmaker Lloyd Kaufman returns to Talk is Jericho. Lloyd is talking about what it took to get the movie made and what it was like working with the late Motorhead frontman Lemmy. Lemmy's last movie appearance before he passed. Lloyd's got some great stories about hanging out with Lemmy at strip clubs and driving him around Los Angeles. Lloyd's also sharing stories from the set and talking more about Troma's legendary over-the-top special effects that have influenced everyone from Quentin Tarantino to Eli Roth to Steven Spielberg to Chris Jericho. That's true. And wait till you hear some of the A-list celebs who got their start in Troma films. Very crazy stuff. But Lloyd's going to tell some stories about how Samuel L. Jackson, Kevin Costner, and even Robert De Niro all got started at Troma. Here we go. Talk is Jericho with the return of Lloyd Kaufman. All right. Here, Uncle Lloyd Kaufman back on Talk is Jericho. And Lloyd, I got to tell you, you had one of the best pitches to get on the show that I've heard in a while. You said, can you please get me on the show before I kick the bucket?
Yes, I'm a very, I'm a senior citizen. This is my 50th year of making movies, Chris, and thank you so much for supporting the art of Troma Entertainment.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, obviously, there's such a huge history of trauma and all the stuff that you guys have done. But basically, you said this is your is it your 45th year of trauma?
Yeah, see, these conglomerates, they do everything to kill the independent movie studio, and they just interfered, and it wasn't the Russians. I say this is the Commissioner Pai of the FCC.
Someone's hacking into this conversation trying to stop the promotion of trauma.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're doing. They killed there were no independent movie studios left except for Trauma Entertainment that have any longevity, right? They can't live. The conglomerates are all powerful.
But that's an interesting point. The last independent movie studio in America or the world today is Trauma?
Well, we're certainly the oldest. I don't think there are any independent movie studios that are independent.
Right.
You know, the word independent now has been taken away, has been appropriated by vassals of the big studios, like the Sundance Film Festival claims to be independent, but they were worshiping Harvey Weinstein up on the hill for how many years, right? Vassal of the mainstream conglomerates, a division of Disney, right?
Right.
We're the last independent one. When I began, Chris, as you know, there were many, many independent movie studios. And now, basically, we're the last long-lived one.
And what's the reason for that, do you think, Lloyd? Why is Trauma last for the last 45 years?
Well, our fans keep us going, and you, of course. And but the reason that there's hardly any independent film activity that's truly independent that gets to the public is that the rules have been changed. The rules to protect the public against monopoly, like the consent decree of 1948, which forbade the conglomerates from owning or controlling movie studios. That law went away under Reagan.
Hmm.
And the financial syndication rule, which, as you know, was the one that stopped vertical integration of the television industry, that went away under Clinton, the greatest Republican president ever. So those two rules have destroyed any ability for a totally independent movie studio to make a profit without the participation of a vassal of one of these devil-worshipping international media conglomerates, such as Fox or Sony or Viacom or AT&T now, which is going to buy Time Warner, right?
Right. Well, yeah, the devil-worshipping conglomerates. I like that. That was good.
Well, devil-worshipping international conglomerates. And furthermore, it's getting more and more consolidated, and your FCC, Federal Communications Commissioner, Ajit Pai, he was a flack for Verizon and the telephone industry, who are taking over the world of art now. You know, AT&T is buying Time Warner, among other things. You already have Comcast, a cable company, like a telephone, a common carrier, owns NBC Universal. So it's a whole cartel. It's a cartel, and there's no way to penetrate the hymen of the mainstream without you, an independent, getting effed. I didn't want to say the bad word. That would be the way I look at it. And it's the truth. There's no other. I've written 7 books, and everything I've said has come true. And now you've got FCC, this FCC chief, Ajit Pai, at flack for Verizon, who's now getting rid of net neutrality on the Internet, net neutrality being the open, free, and democratic Internet, without which there would be no Kickstarter, there would be no many, many cures for cancer, all sorts of professorial doctorates, all that stuff is thanks to net neutrality, the free, open, and diverse playing field, where everybody has the same right to express oneself. And if Trauma has something that the public wants to see, we have just as much ability if we put up something decent that Disney has. And but that's going to go away now thanks to this Ajit Pai, who's now being investigated as being a criminal. He's being investigated for collusion, basically, with the phone companies who are, they want to get rid of net neutrality. They want to have the elite, the media, the billionaire crowd want to have a superhighway where only they can afford to be. So they'll put their content, their homogenized content, up on the superhighway. So, and we won't be able to pay for that. We'll be on a internet that's like a dirt road. You know, it'll be dirt. You know, take a long time to buffer. It'd be like public access TV. You know, where only one's mother tunes in.
So that's what net neutrality is. They're trying to base it to where you would have to pay a higher subscription fee, for lack of a better term, to get the quicker internet and to get all the different functions. And if you can't afford it, you go back to plugging your phone cord into the wall.
Exactly, or smoke signals. You know, the other thing is they now have the right, they're already doing it, even though they don't really have the right, to throttle, to slow down competition content, as they call it. I prefer using the word art, but they've got the right to slow down and censor. Google is demonetizing many YouTube stars simply because they might have a four-letter word in their outreach to the public. These aren't movie makers necessarily. These are philosophers, comedians, scientists. The word I don't want to use it. It's a four-letter word might come up when they're talking to the camera. They demonetize them. And they're all this, you know, every time somebody like the angry video game nerd becomes famous and gets hundreds of millions of eyeballs, those are millions of eyeballs that Rupert Murdoch doesn't get. So, you know, it's quite obvious these are the emperors and dictators who want to kill off the independent competition. Troma is a breadcrumb compared to many of the very popular YouTube stars, and maybe they'll be able to afford to go on the superhighway. But yeah, the way it's going, Comcast and the other ISPs, internet service providers, will have the right to throttle, slow down competition, and speed up their own content and favor their own content. And the worst of this is that in history, sorry to talk so much, but it's the morning here in Tromaville and Uncle Lloyd's full of beans. The history of this thing is that the ISPs and the phone companies went to Clinton and said, "Hey, we don't want to be sued if we if somebody goes on if Chris Jericho goes online and hires someone to kill Lloyd Kaufman's wife. We Comcast don't want to get sued for that. So we want to be a common carrier like the phone companies. Mm-hmm. AT&T is not going to get sued if you if we make a deal for you to kill my wife." And So Clinton gave them, or at least on his watch, the internet service providers were given the common carrier designation. It's called Title II. Again, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a crooked congressperson, but that's the basic facts. So now they want to get that privilege. They want to be protected from lawsuits, but yet they also want the right to slow down certain content and speed up their own content. And the telephone companies under the Title II are required to give equal service to everybody. And also the ISPs under net neutrality, in order to be classified as common carrier, they agreed to net neutrality, which not only meant they had to treat everybody equal, a part of the First Amendment, but they also had to provide internet service for people out in the sticks. Which is really weird, because those are the people, in many cases, who have voted for the Trump clown car. So I don't understand why they're getting rid of net neutrality. It just hurts them. It hurts the Trump elite forces that brought in this very strange...
Let me ask you this, though, Lloyd. When you're talking about Troma being kind of the last of the independent movie studios, how do you remain that? Like, you mentioned the fans and all that stuff, but are you talking about... are you completely self-contained as far as budget and distribution and all that sort of stuff, where you don't need anybody to help out with you at this point?
No, we're totally effed. You can't say four-letter words, right?
You can say what you want.
Oh, good. Yeah. My wife and I, for example, we put up the budget. The Troma didn't have the money for Poultry Guy's Night of the Chicken Dead.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to put it up, and we lost almost all the money, even though the movie was extremely well-reviewed by the New York Times and by many other prominent critics, mm-hmm. and it's been in so many festivals. Return to Newcomb High, Volume 1, was chosen by the Museum of Modern Art to be included in their Best Films of the Year series, which included Spielberg and Woody Allen and
It's incredible.
Scorsese and all these kind of things. So our movies are good. The problem is that we can't get to the public, and so we're totally screwed. The only thing keeping us going are fans, and with the case of Poltergeist, great film. It's a musical. It's got a very good anti-fast food theme. It's got zombies. It's a wonderful film. And we lost 95% of the money. And my wife and I put the money up. Troma didn't have it. And now we're going to be doing it again. We're going to shoot this summer called a movie based on The Tempest, Shakespeare's Tempest, called Shakespeare's Shitstorm. We'll have to put up, we are putting up all the money because I can't say to anybody that, hey, you're going to make money. You can't be the 500,000 budget should be making money. Our movies are better
sure.
than 90% of the stuff that goes out to the public from the mainstream. But we can't get on TV. We can't get on cable. We can't get on anywhere because we're independent. And it's only only our fans that support us. They go and book the movies in the theaters, right? We've got fans all over the country who are calling up their local independent movie theaters to say, hey, book Lloyd's movie. Book Return to Newcomb High, AKA
Volume 2.
So, because the theaters don't call, you know, they're not going to call us back. So
why can't you get it on, like, on demand or something along those lines, the Netflix and those ways of watching?
A very good question. With regard to the movies, when there's new technology, like when HBO comes in, mm-hmm. when they came in, the movies couldn't go on HBO because they were dedicated to television, right? Mm-hmm. Syndication and national television. So they needed movies, right? At that time,
right.
So we have a big library. You know, we have hundreds of movies. So they go to us. They say, you know, we're new technology, but you get in with us, and on the ground floor, and you're gonna be with us, and you'll grow with us. And of course, each time that happens, and Netflix is one of those things. Yeah, you know, we know that they're going to throw us away as soon as they become successful. They'll throw us away, and that's what they do. And Netflix now is using us to subsidize the $8 billion that they. They're trying to use us to subsidize the $8 billion that they're spending. So they're not going to get Return to Newcomb High, which, by the way, is a 7-year project. It's a 2-part movie. And the second half, which is called Return to Newcomb High, a.k.a. Volume 2, that was premiered at the Museum of the Moving Image. So the point is, it's a good movie. And yet Netflix treats us like, garbage.
Yeah,
so they don't even take a phone call. Same with Amazon. And in fact, Amazon has been censoring. They've been kicking independent movies off for allegedly sex and violence. And Google has been demonetizing for the same excuse, even though the Bruce Willis movie that's got all sorts of violence or wonderful mainstream violent movies don't get into any trouble.
It's a
double standard, and it's a club. The club is the governments of Europe, which subsidize movies abroad, and the major conglomerates. So that is what's impeding the growth of truly independent movies. And Sundance is obviously the vassal. You know the society they created up with Harvey Weinstein and right. I mean, we went to Sundance. We established Troma Dance. Trey Parker and Matt Stone and I established a counter festival in the Park City during Sundance, which still exists 20 years later. Troma Dance. But we saw it. We saw how corrupt and how phony this notion of independent movies was when you have the son of Tom Hanks making $12 million movies and calling it independent, that sort of thing.
Right.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah. It's interesting to me, though, Lloyd, because you're talking about in this day and age where there's so much content and there's so many choices that you'd think a brand name like Troma, which has a built-in fan base, a built-in brand name, would be a no-brainer to either be on all these platforms or even for you to sell it to somebody bigger with the Troma name still staying intact.
Well, that's, again, a wonderful question, Chris. The thing is, they want to own the content. They want to own everything. And also, the only movie we've made money on recently is Return to Nukem High Volume 1, with which, and we were partners with a vassal of a major company, Liberty. It was a vassal of Liberty, which is a huge cable company. It was Starz, STARZ.
Right.
And they allowed us to make a tiny profit. And they also didn't censor. The agreement was they couldn't do anything to change the movie once I had directed it. Once I had finished the movie.
Yeah.
So that was okay. And the point is, what did we make? 10% of $500,000 for how many? 3 or 4 years of work.
Right.
So they want to own the movies. They want to either own them, or if they don't own them, they dump them. And I do say, Chris, that thanks to competition, and Netflix and Amazon did create competition to the cartel. There's no question there is great movies and television on Amazon, Netflix, and even on the major conglomerate television networks. So there is better, thanks to competition, there's better material. But I don't know how much of it is going to change the world. I mean, Black Panther, I haven't seen it, but from all... I don't think it's going to be around in 30 years the way the Toxic Avenger is around 30 years. I don't think the people who made Deadpool 30 years, whoever is going to make the equivalent of Deadpool, are going to cite Black Panther as a big influence, like maybe the Deadpool or James Gunn or the Guardian of the Galaxy guy or Trey Parker. And that, the people who've been influenced by Troma. Our movies are playing all over the place 30 years later. Even though Museum of Modern Art just called us, they just played Romeo and Juliet 20 years after it was made in the Shakespeare Festival. And they just asked us for a print of a Story of a Junkie, which the MPAA totally disemboweled with their double standard censoring tricks. Where they, again, they don't censor the mainstream violence, but they censor the independent violence. So total double standard. So I've had a good run. I've made movies for 50 years with nobody telling me or Michael Herz or the Troma team what to do, which was pretty good. But now it's basically impossible. And I do master classes, make your own damn movie master classes.
Yeah.
And I tell the young people, if you want to make money, you must ally yourself with some major company in some way, a vassal of one of those companies, and then you're going to have to fight for your artistic freedom. But some of the mainstream people are getting artistic freedom, and good for them. But I don't have the ability to.
Well, a lot of them that have that are influenced by you and your movies. You mentioned Quentin Tarantino. You mentioned James Gunn. Eli Roth is one of those guys. I mean, there's a whole pantheon. Trey Parker and Matt Stone talking about doing things your own way. And I saw the trailer for Return to Nukem High. And it's classic Troma, over the top, crazy characters, lots of good sex, crazy deaths. How did you come up how did you create this Troma style? Like, when you see Troma on a movie poster, you know what you're going to get. How did you end up with that that way of making movies and that mindset?
I think it's the Lloyd Kaufman, Michael Herz soul. We put that in our movies, and we like comedy, but we both have kind of a dark sense of humor, and I'm extremely publicly minded. As Oliver Wendell Holmes said when he was on the Supreme Court, the justice, a man doesn't live until he really shares in the actions and passions of his time. And Return to Nukem High, aka Volume 2, is a lot of fun. It's very entertaining, but it can change the world. It deals with major, major, major societal themes, which festivals like Toronto or the thing in New York, the one downtown,
Tribeca,
De Niro, Tribeca, and Cannes. They're not interested in that. Their budgets are too high. They have to play it safe. Poultry Guys, Night of the Chicken Dead, should have been in Tribeca. It's a New York movie. Tribeca is supposed to support New York independent filmmakers. It was well reviewed. It was when it opened in New York, the theater in which it played was the highest grossing theater in the nation. But Tribeca was afraid of it. So 2 years later, 2 years later, or 3 years later, they showed a movie. You know, Poultrygeist is about zombie chicken Indians. It's about the disgrace of the fast food industry, the obliteration and torture of millions of chickens, and weaves that into the history of the extermination of the American Indians, and among other themes. But that, God forbid, you know, that's too much for Tribeca. So 2 years later, they do play a movie about the zombie beavers, right, which had absolutely no political content. But, you know, it was kind of goofy, and they could play it at midnight, and they wouldn't get fired for that, and they didn't have to take any chances. And that's been the trauma way. Then 20 years later, after Romeo and Juliet, which, again, got good reviews, but didn't get into any major festivals, got into about 20 of the better quality science fiction festivals. But the festivals that should have been playing it were afraid of it. And now James Gunn is the god of Hollywood,
right?
Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a beautiful film.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, 20 years later, the museum did a Shakespeare festival, Shakespeare series, and they had three Romeo and Juliet movies, Chris, and one was Baz Luhrmann, one was Zeffirelli, and the only one that filled up the room, the auditorium, which is a big one, the only one that filled up the Museum of Modern Art's auditorium was Romeo and Juliet at 4 p.m. The other ones were at 6:00 and 8:00.
Right.
So the point is, we are making good movies. We're making movies that are entertaining and movies that can indeed change the world. And everything in Troma's War, for example, we made that in 1987, and the MPAA, Motion Picture Association of America, totally disemboweled it for no reason. You know, they let Bruce Willis's
Die Hard,
his big movie, Die Hard. Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. They that was no problem. Serious violence was no problem, but the Troma cartoony, goofy cartoon violence, they cut out punches, they cut out dead bodies, they cut out bullet hits. They removed everything from our movie. And it was at a time when we had just had the Toxic Avenger, Class of Nukem High. We had a couple of hits. Our fans, when they saw the obliterated Troma's War in the theater, it looked like a Bambi. And they thought we were selling out.
Right.
And then the few toothless old men, the veterans that showed up to see the movie Troma's War, they were like, what the hell is this? Who's this guy attached at the head, the general attached to Siamese twin that's attached by head to a guy in a corporate suit, the military industrial complex? What kind of war film is this? You know, so they totally screwed us. And they did that to many companies, but most of the little companies, the little studios had bank debt, so they would go out of business. Stupidly use our own money, but it doesn't put us out of business yet. Although we're hanging on by a thread. We're living on the memory of fumes. And our fans did help us. Our fans helped us out on Kickstarter. We ran out of money for volume 2 of the Return to Nukem High, and the fans raised about $80,000 to get over that hump. And then money came in, so we were able to finish the movie. But the fans, we would have lost about 6 months were it not for the fans. So our fans are terrific. And it makes Troma look a lot bigger. A lot of people think we're so successful.
Right.
We shouldn't be getting grants. We shouldn't be getting endowments from nonprofits. You know, we shouldn't be getting, because we're so well established and we're so successful, but we're not.
A lot of people don't realize that, Lloyd. It's like even like being in a rock and roll band. Well, your songs are on the radio and you have albums and you're playing shows, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're making millions. You got to be scrimping and saving to keep that show on the road. And it seems like that's kind of where you're at with Troma 40 years later, still doing the same thing you did when you started back in 1975 or whatever it was.
You're correct. And in fact, I would say I'm paralleling Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman. I'm 72 years old. I drag a huge duffel bag of Troma T-shirts and posters and toys, you know, Toxic Avenger toys and our Blu-rays. I drag it into the Alamo Theater in Austin, you know. It's pathetic.
Just hawking whatever you can, right?
What else? What can I do? It's all we can do. We have an online store called TromaDirect.com, and that we get some fans buy stuff. We set up Troma Now, which is a streaming service exclusive. So the only way you get to see our new movies is on Troma Now.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have a few pennies here and there. We have about 15 movies like The Toxic Avenger and Tromeo and Troma's War and Terra Firma that are always being licensed by somebody, Albania or some new market opens up and we get some breadcrumbs. But it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Getting rid of net neutrality. I've been talking about that since 2004 when I was chairman of the Independent Film and Television Alliance. And the reason that's the trade association for the independent moving picture and television trade association for the independents. And I got myself elected chairman because there's a treasury there, and I wanted to use it to go to Washington and lobby against Comcast's merger with GE and NBC. I wanted to try to put a monkey wrench there, which we did. And instead of having cocktail parties and, that kind of baloney. But now they're not interested anymore. So, the board doesn't seem too excited about fighting the lack of net neutrality. I think they think it's a hopeless.
It seems that kind of the evaporation of the DVD industry probably hurt as well, because before at least you could sell DVDs, but now everybody just wants to watch it on iTunes or watch it online.
You are correct. The collectibles, our fans in many cases are collectors, and some of them want to own every Troma movie. So, we're putting out a Blu-ray of Return to Nukem High in about 6 months, and, we'll sell some, but... certainly, it's basically collectors.
Right, sure.
Collecting art. And we've got T-shirts. There are Toxic Avenger toys. There's Toxic Crusader toys. But it's all basically aimed at the collectible market, which is, we're a classic cult movie studio, except that we are denied access to about 99% of the market. We're basically the victims of economic blacklisting. So that's the problem.
I did look up Troma on Amazon, and it seems a lot of your movies are on Prime. You can watch them. Crazed, Class of Nukem High, Tromeo and Juliet, so Toxic Avenger. You can watch the movies on Amazon. I'm assuming you would get some cash from that, at least, hopefully.
Yeah, pennies.
Yeah.
Maybe. The deals are terrible. They push us to the, they don't do any kind of... we're treated like crap. What can you do?
Yeah.
I'm glad they're there. But in fact, to thank our fans for 40 years of support, the show, just to give you a sense of it, we gave away our entire library, or we are giving away our entire library on YouTube to our fans for free. So every week, if you subscribe to Troma Movies on YouTube, you get an email once a week with what additional content we're putting up. Troma Movies on YouTube is all free, and there are about 400 movies there so far, along with my movie making, Make Your Own Damn Movie lessons and short films and our cartoons. And it's all free. If Amazon was paying us all that money, or anybody, you think we'd put everything up for free? I'm not the most generous person in the world, but our fans are great, and we figured, what the hell, put it up there for free, and our fans will keep supporting us. It's more important than 10 cents from Amazon. I wish we could make money from Amazon. You'd think that Amazon or Netflix, with all their money and all their millions and billions, would be interested in having someone make movies. But they want to own the movies. They want to have people like Jeff Penn. They want to worship at the shrine of sexual harassers and sexual assaults.
Right.
It's a corrupt industry. The head of Amazon got kicked out. Troma, who's looked down upon all these years. There we are. We're like Shakespeare's wife, beyond reproach, but basically blacklisted.
Right.
It's inexcusable. It's a disgrace, and it's what can you do? And thanks to you for at least enjoying our films, and thank you so much for paying attention to Uncle Lloyd.
Well, it surprises me, too, when you talk about guys like a Tarantino, that he wouldn't try and step in and help you out in some way, shape, or form, or maybe it's just beyond reproach from even that a guy at that level.
He's got everybody, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. I get calls like twice a week. Somebody, and, you know, this is how many years after we did Cannibal the Musical.
Right? Yeah, yeah,
that's
right.
Their first movie. We can't take credit for it, but we did help them, and we pitched it for them, and we also created an opening that the beginning of the movie, as you can see, is much more traumatic than the rest of it. But, you know, everybody wants a piece of these people. Mm-hmm. And you know, they got their own problems. You know, they can't really, you know, what can they do? They really can't do much other than what they do, which is talk about trauma all the time.
Just spread awareness.
I mean, whenever Gunn is interviewed, he talks about trauma. Eli Roth, the Deadpool guys, I don't know them, but they have, you know, there's clearly, they've mentioned the Toxic Avenger is a huge influence, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we get so many requests for 35mm prints of the Toxic Avenger from these theaters that want to show 35mm. You know, that's kind of like the collectible audience that they'd rather sit through a scratched up 35mm print than a beautiful shiny Blu-ray.
Right.
But you know, and our prints are, you know, we don't have any. We can't make new prints. The negatives are in storage, and the labs we used are out of business.
Right.
We can't afford to. You know, we can't afford even to make one print. So we. Mm-hmm. And not that you make any money with the 35mm. After the shipping and all that, they show it once at midnight, big deal.
Right.
But you know, the fact is, they're still showing our movies 30 years later. And I don't think that Dante's Peak is, I don't think that Batman Lives is being shown 30 years later.
Nice reference to Dante's Peak. Well done. Let's talk a little bit about Return to Nukem High, a.k.a. Volume 2. So when you're doing a movie like this, how long does it take to film, and kind of what's the schedule? Because I know you kind of are making this like a magnum opus, like a part one, part two, Kill Bill type of a thing. Is it something you filmed at the same time as part one, or did you have to film part one, get the money for part two, and hope for the best?
No, we filmed most of it together at once. Most of it was filmed in the Niagara Falls area with wonderful, what citizens of Niagara Falls were so generous with us. In every possible way. They even gave us money. A couple of the people up there contributed to paying for locations, things like that.
Oh, wow.
And we're really great people. And it was about I think we shot for about 24, 25 days. And then we had about 10 days of filming in New York City. We have a building there that is in Long Island City, and in the basement, we've got, it was like a little studio, so mm-hmm. we did a lot of the small things that we could plug in that we didn't need to film with 80 people hanging around.
Right,
so
right.
I'd say we put in about 30 full days of filming between the two movies. Yeah, right. maybe a little more.
But that gives you, so 30 days of filming, 35 days of filming gives you two movies.
It did in this case. We lived in Niagara Falls. We lived in a vacant funeral home. We had about 80 people. People came from all over the world, from Portugal, from Japan, Australia, California, Canada, England, France. They came from all over the world to sleep on the floor and learn how to defecate in a paper bag just so they could be part of a meaningful artistic experience that would stay with them all their lives. There are people who get engaged on Poltergeist. You can see the documentary of Poltergeist behind the scenes. It's a feature-length movie called Poultry in Motion, Truth is Stranger Than Chicken. And you see that you see how seriously we take our movies and how difficult it is. But you also see that people proposing. We have a scene where one guy in the crew proposed to a young woman, a young cis-identified female, and a beautiful scene. And then there was another thing where the cameraman's crew starts fighting. He starts punching the guy, and we had to put that guy on a bus. You see the unvarnished truth, and you see how difficult. And you see people sleeping on the floor, and how hard the 80 people that hang out with us for a couple of months. How hard they work to make a trauma movie. And I think that has a lot to do. It's the trauma team And we usually develop a very strong-willed and a passionate team who are working, you know, 18-hour days, pretty much 6 days a week or more. Well, they're actually working 7 days. We're shooting 6 days a week. But check out on Trollner Movies. Check out the documentaries, Poultry in Motion. And you can see Poultry Guys for free on the Trollner Movies channel.
Let me ask this, Lloyd, no pun intended. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you come up with a concept and say, we have to call it Poultrygeist? Or are you sitting around going, Poultrygeist? Now, there's a title. I got to write a movie around that.
Great question. No, I usually get very, very involved in some kind of issue that's in society.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, with the Return to Nukem High and Return to Nukem High, there was a guy at the Stars who had the idea to remake Class of Nukem High.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not my idea. Class of Nukem High was a huge hit for us, and there were three Class of Nukem High movies back in the 80s.
Right.
And but it was this guy's idea, and I was able to combine themes that I was quite interested in, and I'm still interested in, the garbage that our children are eating, which may well compel them to be, we have 40% obese population.
Right, yeah.
The bullying thing has never been worse because our educational system is awful. And the educational system, in my opinion, is in my lifetime, the educational system of the United States has just been totally destroyed. You can see it, and I can't imagine somebody who's read Huckleberry Finn, which, as you know, has been banned by the wonderful states that banned it. I cannot believe that anyone who's read Huckleberry Finn or Nathaniel Hawthorne would go and shoot up a school. I just don't believe.
Yeah, right.
And this is something that my father was educated in public schools in New York, where New York has become like Class of Nukem High of 1986.
Yeah. Yeah.
Metal detectors, and it's a shame. My dad went to New York schools and never paid a cent, and went to college in New York, never paid a cent, and got into Harvard Law School. Right.
Right,
and he had to pay more than a cent. But but the point is, you couldn't do. I don't think I think if you have any money today, you've got to pay for education. I just don't. I work with a lot of young people. They're smart, they're wise, but they the schools are so frightened, and the teachers don't get paid. You know, Kim Kardashian gets millions and millions. Zoe, Khloe, $100 million for some civet cat perfume. You know, they're basically cat piss, $100 million. But meanwhile, the school teacher gets less than a garbage man. You know?
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's a terrible thing. And it's. I think the downfall of our country is really, so that's in large part, it's a lesbian. I've been interested in the minority world since Sugar Cookies, 1971. We did a lesbianic version of Hitchcock's Vertigo. But in the case of Return to Nukem High, it's a lesbian love story, and that mm-hmm. brings in the bullying, and the underdog issues are very important to me. And as Frank Capra said, the lost causes are the best causes worth fighting. Jimmy Stewart says that in
it's a Wonderful Life.
And that's why I'm fighting to try to preserve net neutrality. I think we get the nerds together and we tell the Congress, if you don't pass legislation to preserve net neutrality, we're not going to preserve your careers. And, most of them are crooks, so they all want to be reelected. That's the only control we have over the Congress, men. Most of them are white men. And most of them got, if you read today's New York Times, you'll see that a plethora of congressmen in California got plenty of money from the NRA. And I was proud to see that I didn't see one New York congressperson take any money from NRA. Kind of cool. But the point is, we've got to squeeze our elected officials, or we're going to lose a very valuable segment of our First Amendment freedom.
Sounds like there's a trauma movie in there somewhere about net neutrality.
Well, Interestingly enough, the next movie, we're going to go back to Shakespeare, and we're going to make The Tempest, version of The Tempest, Shakespeare's Shitstorm. And the issues of today, so many of the issues of today are contained therein. So stay tuned.
For that one. I want to talk to you a little bit about the FX that I see, not only just in Return to Newcombe High, but it's kind of a trauma, as I mentioned earlier, trademark, just like some of the most ridiculous, over-the-top, disgusting. Are you finding special effects artists and giving them a shot? Is this something where you're coming up with some ideas on these horrific scenes that we're seeing? Tell us a little bit about that aspect of the movies.
Well, we've been, we've been mainly involved in the practical, what they call practical effects, where you actually, you know, we pioneered the using a cantaloupe melon with a wig and filling it up, carving it out and filling it up with cranberry sauce and spaghetti and stuff like that.
Right.
No animal products because I'm vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we pioneered that whole head squashing situation. And, you know, Spielberg and Terrence Malick, they're all doing head squashings now. So our practical effects have become worldwide, and I've written 7 books.
Right.
And in those books, there are many. I pretty much reveal all the secrets to special effects, which in most cases are very, very inexpensive. But with Volume 2, with Return to Newcombe High, as you'll see at Lemley Cinemas, I've used CGI for the first time.
Ooh.
But I know I can't compete with the CGI of the $200 million spectacular movies. So I have used CGI. We have used CGI in a very abstract way. And it's, we also do a lot of breaking the fourth wall in our movies since the 70s. In fact, I was excoriated for using, this Brechtian. Bertolt Brecht did it, but that didn't matter. I was excoriated for... Andy Warhol did it. I got it from Andy Warhol, actually. But Brecht does it. Thornton Wilder does it. You know, many of the greatest playwrights and movie makers of history have used that. But when I did it, everybody hated it. And they also didn't like the fact that I used source music in my movies because I couldn't afford to hire orchestras. See,
source music meaning other songs, like popular songs and things along those lines?
Yeah, in other words, not scoring, but using famous songs.
Right.
I started that in 1971. We used Sally Go Round the Roses and Sugar Cookies, and we used other, in addition to a score. But again, this was criticized. Mm. And now, if you look at Deadpool, how many times does the guy talk to the camera? That's now popular.
Right.
And the same with the using rock and roll songs. Now all these $200 million and mainstream movies, and they're using, '70s. But they can, we could never afford to buy major songs. But we met up with Lemmy from Motorhead.
Yes.
And Motorhead was nice enough to give us songs, and Lemmy acted for us, and the Sublime, and some of the mainstream people like us, so they give us free music, songs that.
Let's talk about the association with Troma and Lemmy and Motorhead, because it's been a long one. And even Return to Newcombe High, aka Volume 2, is Lemmy's last on-screen appearance before he passed away. What was your relationship with Lem?
He was a very nice guy, very generous. We went out a few times. He, I guess from around 1993 until he died, I can't say we spoke on the phone every day, but... You know, he didn't drive, so when I was out in L.A. a few times, I drove him around. And we went to, he liked to go to strip clubs, but only to talk. He didn't really.
Right.
I remember we went out one night. We went out one night to a place, and he was obsessed with one of the women there. And the minute we got in the room, in the club, he immediately sent me into the VIP room to have a lap dance. He bought the lap dance. And, he ran to the bar to talk to the woman that he was infatuated with, and I tried to finish up and say, hey Lemmy, I'd like to buy you a lap dance. Get out of here! But what a nice guy. We saw him up in Toronto. We went backstage and bought him a bottle of Maker's Mark and that kind of stuff. The only thing he ever wanted from us was originally a bottle of Jack Daniels, because sitting around waiting for to go on, you know, waiting for your scene, the actor, it's very boring.
Yeah.
And all he wanted was a bottle of, it changed to Maker's Mark later on, and just two Tromettes to talk to, two attractive people that he could talk to and pass the time. And, totally gentleman. And, none of this Me Too crap. And he was the best. He couldn't have been nicer. And his management are lovely. And I didn't know any of the other Motorhead people.
Mm-hmm.
And but I recently there's a Motorhead video game, and
really?
the company that made it, it's called Victor VRAN, Victor Vran. And I know nothing about video games, but this is a company called Haemont, Haemont. But they have a game called Victor Vran. Lemmy is the main character, and I play the bartender in this game that explains the game, that tees it up. the pieces with me in New York, but we had a press conference, and they had one, and they brought me over to London, and I got to hang out with Phil Campbell, the guitarist, for a full day, and we had a blast. We hit it off immediately.
He's a riot.
The first time he saw me, he said, you don't care what anybody says. You do anything you want. You don't give a f- about anything. immediately we had a great day together during this. Was a press junket. You know, they had about 100 gamer media people, and they had 50 banks of that you could play the game on, and yeah, Toxic Avenger was there, and he was playing it, and it was a lot of fun. But I had we hit it off. He was great. He was terrific. I imagine it's just a great organization, Motorhead.
Let's talk about, you mentioned the Toxic Avenger, obviously kind of the biggest hit in Troma's long history. Did you ever expect that it would be, 30 years later, that Toxie's still your number one guy?
You know, Chris, I have to say, whenever I make a movie, I think it's the best movie in the world. I just get it in my head. So I think the Toxic Avenger is great. I think we got it right. And, there's been the fourth one, Citizen Toxie, and nobody knows about it, but Citizen Toxie is even better. It's terrific. It deals with abortion. It deals with the school shootings. It's stuff that today is even more vital than it was when we made Citizen Toxie in 2000 or 2001, whenever we did it.
Yeah.
Check out. It's free. It's on Troma Movies. It may be on Amazon, too. I don't know. But,
right.
But it's free if you want to see it. And it's on Blu-ray. You can get it at TromaDirect.com if you want the Blu-ray.
It's actually funny. The very first time I ever went to meet up with Vince McMahon in Stamford at his office, this is the first time I walk into his office. He goes, he pulls a script out of his desk and he goes, "Look at this. You've only been here for a day. They already want you in the movies." And it was for Citizen Toxie. Is there a scene in that movie where he's time traveling and ends up in a wrestling match or something along those lines?
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. It's a time travel movie. And, wrestling's been a component. We even had sumo wrestling in Toxic Avenger Part
2. That's
right,
you did, yeah.
In Japan. And the guy playing Toxie had to smash into this elephant guy. And he said it was the weirdest experience he ever had, the feeling of this 600-pound guy or whatever his weight was just unique, said the guy, the actor playing Toxie.
Squishing him. Has there been, like, Toxie action figures and that sort of thing? You think that would be kind of a franchise with video games and everything?
Well, again, we're outside the mainstream, but there were action figures. Mm-hmm. And there were about 200, and there were cartoons, the Toxic Crusader cartoons, which are on Troma Movies on YouTube for free if you want to see them. They're great. They're funny as hell. The company that made the cartoons, Murakami Wolf, they let us write some of them. They were great, and the cartoons are wonderful. I can't take credit for them other than the screenplays that we wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But the cartoons are very funny and witty and satirical and capture the kind of subversive humor of Tromaville without making it inappropriate for 5-year-olds. An adult would enjoy the Toxic Crusaders as much as a 5-year-old would.
I also really appreciate one of my favorite horror movies of all time is Mother's Day, which it took me a while to realize was I don't know if it's an ipso facto Troma production, but it is in the family of Troma movies, correct?
Well, it's my brother's movie, Charles Kaufman. Okay. He wrote it and directed it. And Eli Roth says that Mother's Day is the best horror movie ever. He says that's his favorite. Mother's Day is his favorite. And Mother's Day was remade a couple of years ago.
Right.
And my brother also made When Nature Calls, which is a hilarious movie. And then he did one in Jakarta called Jakarta with Chris Noth. And also a great movie, but it's buried in somebody's library. Some company went bankrupt and blah, blah, blah. But you can see When Nature Calls. Check out When Nature Calls because it's basically the kind of like what Tarantino and the guy from, you know, when they did that grindsploitation.
Robert Rodriguez. Grindhouse.
You know, both wonderful, you know. My brother did that 15 years earlier.
But Mother's Day has the classic Troma underlying theme of social consciousness running all throughout it. Like, as I get older, when I watched it when I was a teenager, obviously it's a gross-up film, and Ike and Adley are just the worst. But as you get older, you realize there's a lot of social commentary in there as well.
You betcha. Oh, my gosh. It's great. Mother's Day is a masterpiece. Mother's Day is, you know, my brother was so much more talented than we are. His scripts were so beautifully. Mother's Day is just a really good script. And
yeah.
The characters are great. And we never got, Toxic Avenger clearly was a big moneymaker. Mainstream, but compared to the Troma universe. But Mother's Day is really the masterpiece. I agree. I think Mother's Day, Death by Temptation, too. Death by Temptation, Samuel Jackson's first movie. We put up the money for it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great movie. That's a great movie. It's all black people in 1990, so you didn't have the New York Times crowing about it.
Right.
Now the New York Times, of course, big deal now that there's no controversy. Panther is.
Yeah, it really has changed over the years as far as what you can and can't really talk about when you're making a movie.
The media, the mainstream media, is always about 20 years behind the public, and the New York Times is the perfect example of that. They wait till the wind blows a certain way, and then they're the champions of the gay community, or they're the champions of the. You know, they still haven't figured out that the Nobel Prize winning leader of Myanmar, Burma, is presiding over genocide of Muslims called the Rohingya. They still haven't figured out that China is a genocidal, corrupt state that is killing off Tibetans and Muslims. I mean, there's hardly any word in the major media about that, right?
Right, right, right.
They're afraid. They're afraid to talk about it. God forbid they should. But, you know, maybe 20 years from now they'll mention that China has destroyed. In fact, China is one of the reasons that companies like Troma are on the ropes, because all our movies are there and we've never received one penny.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
from China. You know, the copyright. In fact, with Poultry Guys, Night of the Chicken Dead, they liked it so much they made a Blu-ray. No, they made a DVD before Troma had even made a telecine. Had transferred from 35 to, we didn't even have a video copy. We only had the 35mm, and somehow the Chinese put out a beautiful DVD with much nicer packaging than we did before we even put the movie out theatrically. We think it was from the Cannes Film Festival that they bribed the projectionist to take the print for a night and make a copy. It's quite interesting. If you go to Troma Movies, I put up a video that's rather satirical, congratulating the Chinese and saying, the efficiency that the way you got the Olympics is what, you know, shows how efficient you are. And you got the DVD of Blu-ray out into the Chinese market
before the movie, right?
We even had a telecine copy of it.
Just a few last questions, Lloyd. You mentioned Samuel Jackson, and there's quite the pantheon of huge, legendary movie stars that have had their start in Troma. I'm going to give you a couple names, and I want you to tell me what movie they were in. So you mentioned Samuel Jackson. How about Robert De Niro? Is that true?
Yes, he's in the wedding party, but we didn't make the wedding party. Was made by a cis-identified female who unfortunately passed away. But she couldn't get distribution, and we were just starting distribution, and we must have smelled honest, so we made some money for them, you know.
Right.
But this was De Niro's first movie. It was also Brian De Palma's first directing job. And I don't think at the time, I can't remember, but I think we helped them finish it. And anyway, it's a very important movie because it's, you know, anybody who's going to do a De Palma retrospective or a De Niro retrospective,
it's going to be included.
You know, yeah, fuck you, De Niro, with your Tribeca Film Festival, not having enough courage to show, or even decency to show any kind of respect for. For Troma, a movie company that's been living in New York, paying taxes in New York, owns a building in New York, has a payroll in New York, and makes movies in New York, and whose wife has been the my wife was the New York State Film Commissioner for 20 years, appointed by both Republican and Democratic governors. She did such a good job. You would think that there'd be some appreciation for the Troma universe by the ultimate New York City community.
Well, especially when they started. Yeah, you gave them a break with that first distribution, too. How about Dustin?
Well, no, I can't say that. But I did give De Niro. I met him maybe 10 years ago, and he asked for a copy of. I gave him a copy of the wedding DVD. He said he wanted to show it to his. It was good. He said he wanted to show it to his kid. Good for him.
There you go. How about Dustin Hoffman?
Again, that's a movie we bought. We bought that
gotcha.
Movie. It's his first movie. But again, you know, we've got a repository of very important movies. We have no money to store the negatives. We're totally going broke. Nobody's, you know, I know there's a lot of noise in restoring, you know, the classics. You know, Scorsese does a great job with the thing in Lawrence of Arabia. But meanwhile, there are a lot of very interesting independent movies that, you know, ought to be re-examined and, we've got a huge collection of them, and the storage is getting to be a burden. We've got depots all over the country. We own about 1,000 movies, and with no revenue, so it's not a pretty picture.
How about Kevin Costner? Same story.
Chisel Beach, USA. Yes, we that wasn't finished, and we bought it. We bought it, and then we finished it, if I remember correctly.
Chisel Beach, USA. Love it.
Yes, it's Kevin Costner's first movie, and Chris, he loves that movie because a few years later, he spent $200 million to go back to the water and make Waterworld. So clearly, Sizzle Beach USA is certainly his finest acting performance. Again, you can see we filmed a piece with him at the for the DVD. It's on the front of the DVD, and I think it's up on Troma Movies on YouTube. There should be a type in Sizzle Beach USA, I think you'll get it. You'll certainly get the introduction we did, which was quite amusing.
And finally, how about Fergie? She's in the news right now. Did she do a Troma movie?
Yes, she did Monster in the Closet. She was a child, and we were executive producers. We put up money for it. And that's a movie also that's so underrated. It's made 1984, 85, somewhere around that zone. And it's a wonderful satire of Hitchcock. It's just great. And it's got all sorts of stars in it. Stella Stevens, Paul Dooley, Fergie. In fact, the guy who crashed his car, the wonderful actor from Furious.
Oh, Paul Walker.
He's a child actor in the movie. And John Carradine is in it. It's a great movie, and nobody knows about it. You know, it's a pity. It's so good, and it's free on the Troma Movies. Monster in the Closet. It's a gay monster in 1985. Whoever did that? Yeah, I know. What more do you want? But you know, in 1985, it was very hard to get theaters and to get people was not as popular. To be a gay monster in 1985.
Right.
Now it's becoming a lot more popular.
So Lloyd, the last question for you. What do you think the future for Troma is with all these adversaries that you're talking about? But it seems like there's so much going on and so many classic Troma movies and characters. Will you continue on?
Well, I'm going to make Shakespeare Shitstorm this summer, Chris.
And, right.
My wife and I are putting up the money for that, and then I think hopefully I'll make a noise like a frog, so I don't use up what little money I have left, so my kids will get something. So I don't know. We, you know, our fans really are the main reason we're still around. They go to the theaters. And if any of our fans are listening out there, the Troma fans like to see movies on a big screen, and they like the Troma movies on a big screen. And we make our movies for the big screen.
Right.
And that's where it's so exciting, because we have thousands of people in our movies, and there's lots of detail that you miss on the small screen, like fire engine sirens and things like that.
All that stuff. So that's coming from a movie, right. It.
Picture that siren right now. I can't tell you how wonderful our fans are in every way, and that's what's keeping us going, our fans, and hopefully there'll be a miracle. You know, there's a Toxic Avenger musical that's playing around. We haven't gotten a penny from it yet. It's excellent, though. It's excellent, and it opened in the West End, did very well in London. It's played about 20 theaters around the country. Maybe it was written by David Bryan of Bon Jovi.
Oh, wow.
The keyboard guy. The music was written by David and Joe DiPietro. They're both won Tonys for Memphis. They wrote that together. And it's a wonderful show. It played in New York. Toxic Avenger, the musical, played in New York for a year off-Broadway. It's a great, you can hear the music on Spotify if you're interested. And again, I can't take no credit for it, but they did a great job mainstreaming the Toxic Avenger to the musical Broadway music. You know, the little old ladies who come to the matinees love it, and the other half of the audience have bones in their noses and pierced penises and all that stuff. And it's wonderful. My wife went to see the show in New York. It's the only thing that I've done. The only thing I've been associated with for 50 years that she could take her junior league friends to see. And so she went about 50 times, and they loved it. They loved it. And the Troma fans loved it. It's a great show. If you get it, if it's playing in your town, go see it. You'll have a lot of fun. The Troma flavor, just like the cartoons, the producers and David Bryan and Joe DiPietro did a wonderful job bringing the Troma subversive sense of humor to a mainstream format. And the tunes, you go out singing the tunes. It's not like those Sondheim plays where you can't even find the tune. Although he's brilliant, I know he's brilliant.
Lloyd, it's great talking to you, man. You're a true American filmmaking icon, and return to Newcomb High, a.k.a. Volume 2. We're going to track it down and check it out as much as we possibly can. So thank you so much, Lloyd.
And by the way, Chris, you have inspired me to dip my 72-year-old toe in the world of wrestling, and I recently had pleasure of wrestling in Florida and I tag-teamed.
I wasn't sure if you pinned the guy or if you had a heart attack and fell on him. I wasn't sure which one it was.
You know, we had two teams filming, too. But naturally, the Troma team missed my... I jumped on the guy. Both teams managed to miss great leap. And then I tried... Then I was trying to do the Al Franken picture. You know, holding the guy's breasts and looking at the camera. But the guy on the still camera didn't get it, so it didn't quite come out the right way. But
after 40 years, the cameraman still misses the shot sometimes.
That's the Troma team.
Thank you, Uncle Lloyd. I appreciate it,
Chris,
my friend.
Thank you.
Cheers, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you and how your knowledge of cinema is so amazing. You've seen everything. And,
I try to, man.
To enjoy it. Movies are the best. Movies are the best, and people should know that they didn't just start with Star Wars.
That's right. That's right.
You know that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lloyd. Talk to you soon, man.
All righty. Best wishes. Thank you so much. Cheers.
All right, Return to Newcomb High is coming out on Christmas Eve. You can rent it or purchase it at Troma Now. That's Troma Films' online streaming channel. Also, tons of stuff for you to watch for free. Movies, behind-the-scenes documentaries, other videos. Check it out at watch.troma.com, all right? And Lloyd's making another movie, Shakespeare's Shitstorm. That's right. It's based on The Tempest. but it's going to have all the great gory special effects that we love in Troma movies. So support Lloyd, support independent filmmaking, support Troma Films. Check out Troma now online and get ready for Return to Nukem High, debuting on Christmas Eve. Don't forget watch.troma.com. All right, coming up Wednesday, I got a really big show, but I got to keep the lid on it right now because I haven't recorded it yet. So just in case something doesn't happen, but I'll tell you exactly what it's going to be as soon as we record it. You'll see it on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho. Trust me, it's very timely. You're going to love it. And it involves one of the greatest WWE performers of all time. All right. So wait until then. In the meantime and in between time, have a great weekend. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big yeah, boy. Go Toxie.